Photographer Alvin Jacobs of Charlotte does what you'd expect a photographer to do. Lots of personal portraits and fashion photography are in his portfolio. And then he has a passion project. He travels to cities with social unrest. He's captured protests in places like Ferguson, Baltimore, and in Charlotte. And last weekend, it was Charlottesville. Jacobs, who's African-American, said it was the first time he feared for his life while on a job. He spoke to us about what he experienced.
It was unlike anything I've ever seen before in my life. It looked like splinter cells of 30 or 40 groups with 10 to 15, 20 members in each group roving. But there were so many going on. There was one at this park. There was one at this corner. There was one at this block. So it just, everything just splintered away. And there were people just everywhere doing everything.
Now, when you say these splinter groups, are you talking about on the right and the left side of the protest?
So typically at protests, in at least the past few years, the ones that I've been privy to have been anti-police brutality. So you're going to have individuals who are against police brutality, and then you'll have the police. So those are really the two sides. Well, if we're talking this particular action, freedom isn't linear. Like, there are people everywhere doing everything. I couldn't identify who was who and what was what. I just saw a lot of white people dressed in different outfits. And when I mean outfits, I mean there would be 15 to 20 guys dressed alike. And there would be 15 to 20 guys over here dressed alike. And there would be 30 or 40 guys over here dressed alike. That's what I didn't understand. So unless they were carrying a particular flag or an insignia or saying a certain thing, you didn't know who was who. And that to me became increasingly problematic because there wasn't that many people of color there.
I want to talk about one photograph in particular. It is a kind of a from the knees up shot of a man on a street. Nobody else in the photograph. He's got his hand clamped on his forehead with a bandage or something underneath it. He's got blood all over his shirt. He's got one of those masks that people wear in the hospital. He looks like he's devastated. It's a really striking image. Tell me about the context of this.
Absolutely. So I encountered that young man approximately 10 minutes after the brutal altercation in the parking garage. The parking garage instance was where the African-American male, the black male that had the braids, was holding his head, who, I mean, he was getting beat inside the parking garage with sticks.
Right. There's video of this.
Absolutely. I have video of this. And I left from that scene because that had, I mean, after the paramedics that came approximately 45 minutes later, things just kept happening. And a young lady ran up to one of the police officers and said, "Hey, you need to get over here. These guys are killing each other." And I kind of looked around and she was gone. You know, I don't know where the officer went. I don't know what happened. So I just kind of just left and was going to regroup somewhere else. Maybe, you know, the United Methodist Church, which was, you know, one of the safe houses there. And I encountered him walking down the street. So someone was helping him. And we kind of like caught up with each other walking, you know, down the street. And I'm like, and I'm just looking at him, you know, just kind of blankly like, I am so sick of this. That's what I remember hearing myself say. And he looked at me and he said, "What's wrong?" And I said, "What?" And he was like, "Are you okay?" And I'm like, "Am I okay?" I'm like, "What?" I'm like, "Sir, you've just been assaulted." He said, "Yes, yes, but I'm going to be fine. Are you okay?" And I, you know, I've seen a lot in the past 5 years, but for someone who was obviously physically and mentally traumatized to have the compassion to ask a complete stranger about him, his mental state, his physical state, this man asked me, I wasn't bleeding. I wasn't harmed. I wasn't hurt. I was okay, you know, for all intents and purposes. And this man asked me, "Was I okay?" To me, that's America. That's the real Charlottesville, Virginia. That's the real narrative here. And after that conversation, it kind of changed what I sought out to capture.
How did it change?
I knew that I needed to do everything within my power to stay safe. And what I mean by safe is getting back home with the images that I had sacrificed to capture. There were so many people there, not just carrying assault rifles. You know, that's your right, and openly in the state of Virginia. But people had sticks and bats and knives and everything that you could possibly carry, you know, to intimidate, to strike fear. And it was odd to me, and I say that word, it was odd to me that they were able to do this with so much reckless abandon.
Protesters on the right and on the left have been saying they've been putting the blame for the violence escalating the way it did at the feet of the police.
Why were people allowed to intermingle violently for so long? It was almost as if they wanted someone. I tweeted earlier in the morning. I said, someone is going to get killed. And that tweet has been referenced multiple times. I said, someone's going to get killed here today. I'm telling you, this feels like someone is going to get killed. But I thought it was going to be from a gunshot. You know, I didn't figure it was going to be vehicular homicide. I thought someone was actually going to be shot. And that was my greatest concern. I'm like, okay, well, you've got people who are carrying guns, which is fine. But there are also people who are openly communicating the fact that they want to kill you. They are also openly brandishing those weapons. They are also congregating in a means to do so. And it's like all of these elements together, all of these things mixed up is something I've never seen before. All by themselves, it is what it is. Someone can feel however they feel. That's fine, right? I guess they can do whatever it is they want to do. That's fine. But when you mix all of those things together and in a mob type setting, anything can set off a series of emotions. Something you can say, something you can do. You can be in the wrong place at the wrong time. And I'm like, this just doesn't make any sense why this is being allowed to go on for so long.
So do you think there's some truth to it then, that the police didn't step in sooner?
I have video of people fighting 5-10 minutes until the altercation and the cops are walking up. And what I mean by cops, law enforcement is intervening slowly. I didn't see one member of law enforcement break a stride. There are people running around. There are people yelling, fighting, screaming for help, asking for assistance. And I didn't really see any urgency on behalf of law enforcement. And then, again, upon reading that statement, it appears that at the very least, the governor felt that law enforcement was outmanned, outgunned, which I don't understand with unlimited resources. And they knew what was going to transpire. They have more intelligence than you and I do. And what I mean by intelligence is they have the capacity to do whatever research is necessary to ascertain information. Is it because the police officers were white and because the protesters on either side, and people keep saying either side, I don't know who was who. There was no possible way, unless that particular person you knew from somewhere else, you know, you knew personally, you didn't know who was who, because everyone didn't have these badges and these insignias. Like, people were just there. And just because you didn't have anything on, because I saw people with khaki pants and polo shirts, they didn't have any insignias until I saw a young white girl carrying a flag. And this was the only person that had something in that group. It said end white genocide. So I'm like, okay. Otherwise, you look like a fraternity, you know, khaki pants, golf. You guys are going to hang out. You guys are going on whatever. You wouldn't have known. And that, again, is where it became increasingly problematic, because a lot of times people tend to think that people that are racist are slack jawed, you know, buffoons. These people here didn't necessarily represent that ideology. They looked just like everyone else looks. And they were given free rein.
Were you ever afraid for your own safety?
I was. As soon as I got there, as soon as I arrived and I was walking to one of the staging areas for the counter protesters, I'm walking down just a regular residential street sidewalk. You know, they're not that wide. And I don't know what particular group this was, but they started to deploy. They pulled up in like three vans, trucks, whatever, and they started to deploy onto the side of the sidewalk, right in front of me. Now, I'm by myself. I have my camera gear on me, and there's maybe 50 guys deploying quickly, jumping out, getting in formation, shields, bats, guns, knives, everything. And they're deploying on either side of me, both sides of me, just really, really quickly. And everything in me just kind of went neutral, if that makes any sense. It was that I'm in a position right now where this could be a problem. And the last thing I need to do is to display aggression. There's only one of me. There's 50 of them. They're here for a specific reason. I don't want anything surrounding me, my energy or otherwise. I need to be invisible. I need for the next 30 seconds until I get to this corner, I need to become invisible, because all I needed to do was possibly to trip, to bump into someone, to break my stride, or to otherwise feel like there was a problem. I just went invisible. And I got to the curb, I turned around, and I took a couple of photos quickly. Because, again, this was my introduction. I didn't know what was going on. I hadn't been there but for 5 minutes.
So what happened with this group of 50 people that just jumped out of the vans in front of you? What happened?
They deployed. They, you know, stood on the side. They, you know, got in formation, got everyone situated, and they marched off to the direction they were going in. I breathed a sigh of relief. As soon as I got to the curb, I was like, wow, that was a close one. But I didn't want to. I guess in certain situations like that, you don't need to do anything wrong. If someone's looking for a fight or looking for, you know, they're going to get what they're going to get. But I didn't want to help them with that. Let me just go ahead and get on out the way.
You covered the unrest following the Keith Scott shooting in Charlotte. Was that on your mind in Charlottesville?
No, because it was completely different. It was completely different from Ferguson. It was completely different from Baltimore and Brooklyn and Chicago and even Standing Rock. It was completely different. Charlotte was mainly anti-police brutality protesters and, you know, the police. So there was pretty much a clear line that was drawn. You knew who was on which side outside of, you know, outside agitators. And there were only a few of them. What we were dealing with in Charlottesville was chaos, complete chaos. People running around with reckless abandon, with semi-automatic weapons, assault rifles, knives, bats, everything you could have, just literally running around. And there was nothing that anyone can do about it.
We're almost at the one-year anniversary of the shooting of Keith Scott. What are your thoughts on that?
We're nowhere near. We're just as divided as we were before. Charlotte is one of the best cities in hiding what's wrong. It's one of the best cities in being itself. There's something that I remember hearing. It was called the Charlotte No. You know, it's like, there's so much going on here that's good, but it's overshadowed by so much bad, because it refuses, as a community, as a city, it refuses to deal with the issues. Yes, we have a lot of brand new developments. We have a lot of new condominiums. We have a lot of new homes being built, but there's a lot of people being pushed out of neighborhoods, and there's a lot of people that are homeless, and there's a lot of people that are unemployed, and there's a lot of people that are undereducated, and those issues aren't being addressed. So what happens to those marginalized members of the community? What happens? For example, with the one-year anniversary, there's going to be a lot of programming. People that are in charge of these anniversaries, of these programming, should reach out to the organizers of the uprising, because there's been a lot of people who are popping up out of the woodwork that are saying that they are a part of something, but they never touch the ground. I think that if Charlotte really wants to identify and really wants to be inclusive and really wants to be about the things that it's about, it has to bring people in that aren't just skilled, that aren't just educated, but people who are actually living the life that they are trying to understand.
Alvin Jacobs, thank you.
Thank you.